Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We made it halfway. It is 61 degrees and very cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like we have gotten rid of the hot and humid. It finally was a good sleeping night again. I will tell you, I would never, ever do well in the South. That heat is just not conducive with a happy Jewels. That is for sure. All right, so where did we leave off yesterday? We had taken a look at IBM's $3 billion investment in the Internet of Things and their quote-unquote enchanted objects, if you remember, the somewhat smart devices that will be littering your life here in the very near future, the umbrellas that light up when it senses humidity, and the small living space that reconfigures itself depending upon what you need it for. There's some pretty crazy stuff coming on the horizon. We also took a look over the last 2 days in regards to security, government hacking, government tools, that hacking team that's been working with a lot of the alphabet agencies and police agencies globally to spy on people, crack encryption, pull your Skype, scan your messages en masse. We looked also at robotics and some of the potential issues that we have in the future, whether or not artificial intelligence needs to have some sort of moral code, and then how are they going to decode that moral code? They definitely threw a couple awesome questions in there to ponder, and you guys already know what my opinion is on all this. I say that the day the EMP comes and blows up all this technology might be the one thing that saves the human race, or at least human 1.0. So what I wanted to continue with today is looking a little more in depth at this hacking team. If you remember, we actually listened to that video 2 days in a row, and pretty much they can get into anything and everything. They were using a vulnerability, actually two vulnerabilities in Flash. One was patched in early July, July 8th, I believe. The second one was just patched over the last few days, and in response to those known holes and the leaks that had happened with the hacking team, where it became public knowledge that they were working with all these different government agencies to spy on people across the globe, Firefox had blocked Flash until Adobe had patched some of those holes. So that was pretty interesting. Out of all of the browsers, Firefox has been at least the one that has touted itself as something for the people and seriously being concerned about your privacy. I don't know if I trust any company fully, but I would say out of the three, you have Google working with Chrome, you have Microsoft working with Internet Explorer, and then you have Firefox and Mozilla. Mozilla's always been kind of the open source, came from a college, university type environment. So I have to give kudos to Mozilla for blocking Flash for a few days and really kind of hammering at home that they need to patch those holes. Now, don't think that because those two holes were patched that they were using as vulnerabilities to get into your machine that you're safe, because I'm sure that there's many more. There's backdoors everywhere, as we know. But anyway, let's get back to this hacking team. So I found a wiki on Hacking Team. I had kind of questioned where they exactly came from and who was financing them. So check this out. Hacking Team is a Milan-based information technology company that sells offensive intrusion and surveillance capabilities to governments and law enforcement agencies. Its remote control systems enable governments to monitor the communications of internet users, decipher their encrypted files and emails, record Skype and other voice over IP communications, and remotely activate phones and cameras on target computers. And if you don't think that you're a target computer, think again, because I bet you just about every single one of us listening to this show and any reading or visiting any other alternative media websites absolutely is. The company has been criticized for providing these capabilities to governments with poor human rights records. And I think the United States is on that list. Hacking Team states that they have the ability to disable their software if it is used unethically. And again, it's always subjective. Who is going to make that decision as to what is ethical and what is unethical? In maybe Google. Maybe Google, on top of their truth algorithm, can now have an ethics algorithm as well. In June 2014, a report from the University of Toronto detailed the functionality and architecture of Hacking Team's remote control system, more affectionately known as RCS, Software and Operator Tradecraft. Hacking Team employs around 40 people in its Italian office and has subsidiary branches in Annapolis and Singapore, and its products are used in dozens of countries across six continents. Company history: Hacking Team was started by two Italian programmers, Alberto Ornaghi and Marco Valeri. Prior to the company's formal establishment, Ornaghi and Valeri created a set of tools that could be used to monitor and remotely manipulate target computers. The program, called EtherCap, was embraced both by WHO hackers, yes, to spy on people, and by companies that hoped to test the security of their own networks. So they would be doing, like, trying to hack. Typically, you'll take a hacker who's become a white hat, they call them, and white hats will then try to hack into your network for money and then show you what vulnerabilities they found so you could patch the holes. So how great, because this company was originally writing software that they were selling to anyone and everyone who wanted to hack. I don't see any ethics in that history there. It says the Milan Police Department learned about their tools and hoping to use EtherCap to spy on Italian citizens and listen to their Skype calls, the police contacted Ornaghi and Valeri and asked them to help modify the program. Now, I'm going to tell you what. I don't know anything really about the history of this company, but typically what happens is when they find out you're a hacker who is maybe not performing crime, but opening back doors for who knows what crime, the police department does not contact you and typically ask you whether or not you can help them. They typically will come at you and say, "We know it's you. We got all these charges. And if you want to get off these charges, you're going to help us or we're going to send you to jail for life." That's typically how it works. But anyway, this is watered down Wikipedia history, revisionist history, I'm sure. Anyway, Hacking Team was born out of, yes, the cooperation that they decided to give to the Milan Police Department because they asked so nicely. And Hacking Team became, quote, the first sellers of commercial hacking software to the police, unquote. And that's what I said yesterday. I've never seen that really, except with, and I think they do mention it in here, the company that created FinFisher. FinFisher was the first time I had really seen anything solid about federal governments contracting third-party agencies to build backdoor tools to easily surveil end targets. 2015 data breach against Hacker Team on July 5th, 2015, so that was just a few weeks ago. The Twitter account of the company, Hacking Team, was compromised by an unknown individual who published an announcement of a data breach against Hacking Team's computer systems. The initial message read, quote, "Since we have nothing to hide, we're publishing all of our emails, files, and source codes," and then provided links to over 400 gigabytes of data that they stole, holy crap, including alleged internal emails, invoices, and source code, which were then leaked via BitTorrent and Mega. An announcement of the data breach, including links to the BitTorrent seed, were retweeted by WikiLeaks and many others throughout social media. The material was voluminous An early analysis appeared to reveal that Hacking Team had invoiced the Lebanese army and Sudan, and that spy tools were also sold to Bahrain and Kazakhstan. Hacking Team had previously claimed that they had never done business with Sudan. The leaked data revealed a zero-day cross-platform flash exploit, which means that pretty much they could get into any platform, anyone who was running flash on their computer, and it was a day zero attack. So if you did not have some sort of scanning software that was looking for anomalous behavior versus an antivirus, let's say, or a tool that would run on signatures, you wouldn't detect it at all. The dump included a demo of this exploit by opening Calculator from a test web page. Adobe patched this hole on July 8, 2015, but another vulnerability involving Adobe was revealed in the dumps, which took advantage of a buffer overflow attack on an Adobe Open Type Manager DLL, which is included in Microsoft Windows. So how amazing is that? So then it didn't even require Adobe Flash for this other vulnerability. It was a DLL that was running within Windows to support Adobe products that opened the back door. This DLL is running kernel mode. Basically, kernel mode is like the core root, so it can get into anything. So it could attack. So the attack could perform privileged escalation by bypassing the sandbox. Also revealed in the leaked data was the Hacking Team's employees' use of weak passwords, including the word password with a 4 in it, Wolverine, and Universo. After a few hours without response from Hacking Team, member Christian Pazzi tweeted the company was working closely with the police and, quote, what the attackers are claiming regarding our company is not true. Of course, he would exclaim that. He also claimed that the leak archive contained a virus, so don't touch it, don't read it, oh my God, and it constituted false info. But shortly after these tweets, Pazzi's Twitter account itself was apparently compromised. So, not much hackers if they can be hacked by another hacker. They weren't paying attention to their own back doors, or it was an inside job. Responsibility for this attack was claimed by a hacker known as Phineas Fisher on Twitter. Phineas has previously attacked spyware firm, here we go, Gamma International, who produce malware such as FinFisher for governments and corporations. Now, I don't quite remember what the vulnerability in FinFisher was. Give me one second here. FinFisher, also known as FinSpy, is a surveillance software marketed by Gamma International in Andover, England, and Gamma International in Munich, which markets the spyware through law enforcement channels. Gamma International is a subsidiary, blah, blah, blah. FinFisher can be covertly installed on targets' computers by exploiting security lapses in the update procedures of non-suspect software. The company has been criticized by human rights organizations for selling these capabilities to repressive or non-democratic states known for monitoring and imprisoning political dissidents. Egypt was one of them. In 2014, an American citizen sued the Ethiopian government for downloading FinFisher on his computer. In August of 2014, FinFisher's source code, pricing, support history, and other relevant data were retrieved and made available on the internet. Yeah, and it was Firefox, actually. Firefox EXE was the file that they had replicated, and there was a lawsuit against them for, like, copyright violation by making it look like it was Firefox, but it wasn't. It was actually their spy software. So this other company, Hacking Team, was using Adobe vulnerabilities to get into your machine. So anyway, check this out. They have a published customer list as to who is using Hacking Team software. This is a full list of Hacking Team's customers were leaked in the 2015 breach. Disclosed documents show Hacking Team had 70 current customers, mostly military, police, federal, and provincial governments. We had, the country, area, agency, so I don't know really who any of these are from these other countries, but we have Italy's LEA. We have Spain's intelligence, Singapore intelligence, Hungary intelligence, Morocco intelligence, another Italian other, this is their DA, Malaysian intelligence, another Italian intelligence, Hungarian intelligence, another Italy LEA, this is some sort of CC, I don't know what that is, Saudi intelligence, Luxembourg other, Mexican intelligence, Czechoslovakian LEA, Egyptian other, the FBI in the USA, Oman's intelligence, Panamanian intelligence, Turkish national police, the UAE, Uzbekistan's intelligence, the Department of Defense in the United States, and we're going to pop over. Actually, someone who I thought was pretty well versed in this stuff had a little bit of hole in their knowledge as to how bad the backdoor hacking is right now from federal agencies against quote-unquote dissidents like you and me. And I dropped an article back that we had read in 2013, I believe, about Keith Alexander and his cyber patrol. So I just want to touch on that after we look at this. So Department of Defense was one of the agencies that had also purchase this software, Nigerian intelligence, Ethiopian intelligence, Luxembourg other, Malaysian intelligence, Moroccan, Sudan, Russian intelligence, more Saudis, Kazakhstan intelligence, South Korea, 5163 Army Division, which is a alias of the South Korean National Intelligence Service, the UAE intelligence. Oh, look at the U.S.'s Drug Enforcement Administration. So the DEA is also surveilling you. Poland's Central Anti-Corruption Bureau. MOD Saudi. Malaysian Intelligence. More. And I don't even know how to say this one. Azerbaijan. Some European, I don't know, I don't even know what this country is. Azerbaijan, Azerbaijan, intelligence, Mongolian intelligence, I didn't know Mongolia had an intelligence service, Ecuador's National Intelligence Secretariat, Colombia's Police Intelligence Directorate, Cyprus intelligence, let's see, more. Mexico, Malaysia, Honduras, Mexico, Mexico, Italy, Mexico, Mexico, Chile, Mexico, Thailand, Vietnam, Switzerland, Vietnam, Egypt, Lebanon, Brazil, and Albania's State Informative Service. So there you go. I believe they said there were 70 current customers. Sounds like Hacking Team is doing really well in the year of 2015 for sales. That is for sure. It says Hacking Team has been criticized for selling its products and services to certain governments such as Sudan, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia. And in June 2014, a UN panel monitoring the implementation of sanctions on Sudan requested information from Hacking Team about their alleged sales of software to the country in contravention of United Nations weapons export ban to Sudan. So they are calling this a weapon per the United Nations. Internal records at Hacking Team revealed through the 2015 hacking of their systems disclose that the country that Hacking Team had in 2012 sold to Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Service in snooping software titled Remote Control Systems. In response to the UN panel, the company responded in 2015 to January that they were not currently selling to Sudan. And in a follow-up exchange, Hacking Team asserted that their products was not controlled as a weapon, so the request was out of the scope of the panel. Oh, nice little loophole. There was no need for them then to disclose previous sales, which they considered confidential business information, but the UN disagreed. The view of the panel is such that the software is ideally suited to support military electronic intelligence operations, and it may potentially fall under the category of military equipment or assistance related to prohibited items. This thus its potential use in targeting any of the belligerents in Darfur is of interest to the panel. So there you go. Hacking Team software is considered a military weapon by the United Nations. And oh, speaking of military weapons, in an article back from, I believe it was June of 2013, but let me get up there. I actually did three whole shows on this. Hey, look at my memory is good. June 12th of 2013 by James Bamford and Wired, titled NSA Snooping Was Only the Beginning, Meet the Spy Chief Leading Us Into Cyber War. And this was a very, very, very in-depth article on Keith Alexander, where he came from, what he was about, and how he developed the cyber warfare division of the military into this cyber hacking extraordinaire for the 21st century to come after every single one of us. And I'm trying to scroll down here because I wanted to point out, I'm sure that most of us do not realize, you know, when they think of government hacking into your computer, you're thinking maybe a cyber patrol, maybe an FBI with some CSI type agents. But check this out. General Keith Alexander's empire, he was in charge of the NSA, which is, of course, the National Security Agency, which is the one that comes to mind when most people think of government hacking end user computers. But there's also the CSS, which is the Central Security Service, originally envisioned as a fourth branch of the armed services. This organization is now described as a, quote, combat support agency. It coordinates with the Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, and Air Force to eavesdrop on foreign signals, like, oh, I don't know, in the old days, tapping into undersea cables or wireless communications. There's another division that he was in charge of, and now I don't remember that dude's name, but he is one scary-looking dude that took over for Alexander. Is U.S. Cybercom, and this is U.S. Cyber Command, established by the Department of Defense in 2009 to deter cyber attacks, quote-unquote, proactively. That's kind of like the history of U.S. biowarfare and Nixon coming out in 1972 saying that we would proactively develop vaccines and give up our biowarfare program. Yeah, right. In March of 2013, Alexander gave a hint of the command's mandate, and this is this U.S. Cybercom, at the U.S. Armed Services Committee, quote, I would like it to be clear that this team, this Defend the Nation team, is not a defensive team. So he's making it very clear that they are proactive. So I am sure proactive in Newspeak is basically saying that they are scanning everybody and looking for belligerents and insurgents talking about, oh, I don't know, pressure cookers and alarm clocks, if you heard Brandon Turberville's show last night. Another division that he was in charge of was the CAE, which is the Centers for Academic Excellence, launched in 1998, the NSA initiative seeks to increase the number of college students. And yes, those poor college students that are out looking for a dangling carrot and where to hang their hat for their career are very, very, very vulnerable to be sucked into the machine with promises of fame and fortune, traveling the world and excitement, oh my God, and keeping the nation safe. They've groomed them for this. And it's very sad because our children are being turned against us to sell out the human race, sell out you and me, sell out your neighbor for, I don't know, reading about machetes on Walmart. Who knows? Who knows what are the keywords now that they're using to put you on the red list? But I will guarantee you that any of us that have surfed anything have done at least something or have something in our history on our browser that put us on the red list. Anyway, back to the Center for Academic Excellence. It seeks to increase the number of college students competent in quote-unquote information assurance. last year, which would have been 2012, the agency accredited 4 universities to lead the way in training the next generation of cyber operators in, quote, collection, exploitation, and response. Now, I told you guys many times before, I've been in technology for many years. For the majority of my career, that's what I did. And if I were still in there right now, that's pretty much where it's all going. It's all going into security, building the machine, tracking, tracing, databasing, slicing, dicing, exploitation, hacking, white hat hacking, mind you, and protecting against all of the alleged evil on the internet. I can't do that. It's the entire paradigm that they've built is false. And it's all about the takeover of a once wild frontier. They are taking over the internet, and they are then forwarding this agenda with mad science gone mad to take over and usurp biology with synthetics, synthetic biology, artificial intelligence. We're going to look a little more at that. And of course, preying on the college students is the greatest way to groom the next generation and bring them into the fold. Another division that Keith Alexander was in charge of was the Special Collection Service. This is a unit whose existence has never been officially acknowledged by the defense establishment. But according to an account of an anonymous CIA official, members of the ultra-top secret group are involved in covert eavesdropping from U.S. embassies around the world. And then the sixth team that he was in charge of was the JFCC-NW. This is the Joint Functional Component Command for Network Warfare. That's a mouthful. Created in 2005 as part of the U.S. Strategic Command, which controls the nation's nuclear arsenal, it played a lead role in promoting the idea of thwarting Iran's own nuclear ambitions with a cyber attack. And yes, that was on the flash drive. I don't remember Flame, and then there was another one. But it was accused that United States and Israeli programmers had made this virus that then infected the nuclear reactors in Iran. This division was folded into Cybercom in 2010. Now, what's so interesting about this, so Keith Alexander was in charge of this alphabet agency group of acronyms, so they call it. They're all headquartered in Fort Meade, Maryland, which of course is where the NSA is. And they were pretty much tying warfare into the cyber world. Now, when Keith Alexander left the NSA, he quote-unquote retired. He then started his own security company. And if you remember, there was the warning to J.P. Morgan Chase. He had offered his services because he said that they were insecure. And they said thanks, but no thanks. And the next thing you know, J.P. Morgan Chase got hacked. Though, of course, there was never any major customer data that was leaked, but it was in my eyes, I saw that, and I was like, you know what? They just gave J.P. Morgan a warning and said, play nice or else you're done. But you know, how interesting. So Keith Alexander was the head of the NSA, the head of all the hacking teams for the federal government, it appears. And remember, all these federal agencies are also working with corporations like Google and Microsoft with their Cyber Command Division. NYPD spun right in there, and they have their Israeli intelligence group as well that's working in conjunction with the NYPD. Amazon, who built the CIA cloud, and a bunch of other agencies in parallel. Now we have all the Amazon drones that were approved. Those should be flying here very soon. We should do an update on that. You know, this is just one big happy orgy now, isn't it? It certainly is. All right, so I want to pop over here now. I was just trying to give a little background. Hecty dropped me an FBO.gov GSA kind of open leading edge technologies listing. FBO.gov, if you remember, is Federal Business Opportunities website. And anything that they request pricing on, they have to, by law, publish here. So there's, if you ever have a boring evening and you want to look at some interesting stuff, I recommend going out to FBO.gov. Anyone who's ever worked for a technology corporation, especially that has done any type of business as a reseller of equipment to the federal government or services, knows about FBO.gov. It's where you find bidding opportunities for projects. So FBO.gov has a listing that says Alliant 2 GWAC RFI. So this is a request for information on leading edge technologies from the United States General Services Administration, more affectionately known as GSA. That was the one thing as a reseller. You always wanted, if you wanted to sell to the federal government, you wanted to get the products that you sold on GSA contract. That basically means that you are listed as an approved source for products. You have the products that you are offering to the feds on this list with fixed pricing. And then instead of having to go to bid, they can just go and say, oh, look, Joe's Computers has a fixed price of $100 for widget A to the federal government. And, you know, I like my sales guy at Joe's Computers. This is how it always worked. He took me out for drinks last time and to the strip joint afterward. So I'm going to buy my widget A's from Joe's Computers for $100. And they can do it. Doesn't have to go to bid. It's already on GSA contract, and that's all there is to it. It's all about relationships, people. So anyway, you want to get on GSA contract, so check out what GSA is looking for resellers to sell them and give them information to now get onto GSA contract. Number one is artificial intelligence. Yes, they want artificial intelligence products on GSA contract. Number two, autonomic computing. That would be any type of probably unmanned robotics, aerial vehicles, computers that make lots of their own decisions without lots of human input would be my guess. We'll scroll down after I finish reading all these. Number three, big data. Yes, they are looking for big data holders like Amazon. I will guarantee you Amazon's going to be on that list. To be able to store immense amounts of information. I will guarantee you, too, that some of the hard drive manufacturers that have been working on alternative storage capabilities. I know Seagate at one point was working on some sort of crystalline storage. I'm sure there are those out there also working on DNA storage, so it might include some universities and mad scientists gone mad. Man, I would love to see this contract. Number four, they are looking for people who sell biometrics equipment and software. And we're going to look at, if we don't run out of time, we're going to look at some biometric stuff that's going on. Number five, cloud computing. So yes, again, Amazon, probably Google, IBM, they can all, maybe even Beidou, though Beidou is out of China and the federal contract does not like to use any type of foreign corporations, at least that I saw. I mean, it's a little hard now, especially with transistors since shit's made all over the world, but the majority of things that I've seen out of GSA is that it has to mostly be in the U.S. They have to be. Typically, you'll get a leg up if you're a small business versus a large corporation. You get bonus points for that, though your pricing is typically better, but you get better discounts if you're a small business. And if you're minority or women-owned, that's another little loophole that'll get you some added bonus points on the GSA schedule. Number six, they're looking for companies focusing on cybersecurity, so I'll bet you the hacking team, even though they're Milan-based, looks like they're somehow blessed and approved for federal usage. Number 7, health information technology. Now, how interesting is that, knowing what we know about BerryCare and precision medicine, right? We dug way deep. Anyone who missed those shows, go to the UCY's YouTube channel, youtube.com/UCYTV, no dot, and then find the Before the First Cut playlist. Scroll way back and you will see probably 4 or 5 shows on Obamacare, Big Pharma, precision medicine, biotechnology, nanotechnology, and Mad Science Gone Mad. And literally, some of the research that we did for those shows will make your hair stand on end. It is such an ugly, ugly, ugly picture that was painted for that. So very interesting that they're going to make just a line item budget here for health information technology to bag and tag you by every cell. Number 8, oh, probably the most innocuous of all, mobile IT. Oh, yes, mobile IT, that sounds innocuous, but to be able to fully operate and control your information technology from anywhere on the planet, sitting on a beach, driving in a car, I mean, you can already do that with some remote control tools. I've been doing it for 12, 15 years now, working remotely, back-ending to servers and software and running my whole show remotely. I mean, I can be anywhere as long as I have an internet connection. Number 9, and we looked at this yesterday, IBM's $3 billion investment. And don't think that these two things don't have anything to do with each other. Number 9, the Internet of Things, with an acronym of capital I, small O, capital T, yes, IoT, Internet of Things, and Enchanted Objects. Those, of course, aren't on here, but I am sure that the federal agencies would love enchanted objects that can listen, spy, and alert based upon keywords said in your home next to your umbrella, let's say. And number 10, and by the way, IBM has always been a big federal contractor. They do tons, 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 tons of work for the feds. And number 10, virtual networking. And again, virtual networking, yes, to be able to remote control things on a network, anywhere and everywhere, from anywhere. You know, with that executive order that Obama passed a month or two ago that pretty much said we're going to have cooperation now between all of the corporations and the federal government to what? Oh, keep you safe, keep all of us safe. Where the corporate America will now be spying on the employees and end users and reporting information back to the feds versus what? Oh, the NSA spying on you. But the NSA will be providing back-end support to these corporations. I am glad that we are all safe now. Now, the one thing that I wanted to look at, I said that I would look at a little bit more for autonomic computing. Let's see what they list that as. Autonomic computing, a self-managing computing model named after and partnered on the human body's autonomic nervous system. An autonomic computing system would control the functioning of computer applications and systems without input from the user. Yes. So, and one of the things I already saw a long time ago, DARPA had been working on some of this with protection software. They called it perimeter software. It was going to be like the next generation of antivirus type stuff and malware, day zero type stuff, which was generation 2. This autonomic antivirus, intrusion detection type software, they described it as working as a human immune system, where it would be monitoring and surveilling operations at all times, kind of like intrusion detection does, but it would be able to self-repair. There would be no interaction required from a human end user to be able to go out and search and destroy. That's frightening. That is Skynet being birthed. You hear the birth pangs? Ah! People screaming, being hit by autonomous drones, people. That is what that is. That is the birth of Skynet. Security without human intervention. Anyway, back to this federal description of what autonomic computing is. It's a functioning of computer applications and systems without input from the user in the same way that the autonomic nervous system regulates bodily systems without conscious input from the individual. The goal of autonomic computing is to create systems that run themselves, capable of high-level functioning, yes, artificial intelligence, while keeping the system's complexity invisible to the user. Yes, going to be dumb-end user-friendly user interface. That's always important to building a piece of software that will be embraced with open arms. Make it dumb-end user-friendly colors and big push buttons, because that's all our 8-second human attention span can deal with. You know, some of the stuff I saw for the DoD was that now, since it's so difficult to find any smart people, and I saw, you know, General Keith Alexander has his outreach program to the universities, so they're snatching up all the smartest kids. Don't think that they're also not, I'd read quite a long time ago that they were surveilling via the kids' video games, Xbox systems, and some whatever the newest Microsoft, I don't even know what the systems are called anymore. I had an Xbox, but the next generation Xbox, and then with some of these 3D goggle things and whatever that they're using. Don't ask me what they're called, because I really don't care. I try to stay as far away from that shit as I can. But they were utilizing that to help rate kids' capabilities. And they were using that as almost a recruiting tool, getting them all trained up in whatever capabilities they want to use 18 years from now, and surveilling those kids to see who has great hand-eye coordination or whatever. But what these 3D goggles are now preparing kids for, just like in the past we had 3D simulations of flight simulators that prepared an entire generation of drone pilots, these new 3D virtual reality goggle games, Department of Defense goggle games, are creating an entire generation of children that are going to be able to use this brand new autonomous software for attacking enemy targets in cyberspace. And you won't have to do it with programming skills anymore. Like they said, it's going to be dumb-end user systems. You put on the goggles and you see the evil enemy hiding behind the rock, and you take your hand and you wave it in the air, which becomes a, oh, I don't know, nail gun or laser rail gun zapper to shoot the enemy in virtual 3D, and you could do it with the wave of your hand. And in real life, it is going to do all the back-end hard stuff. Find the IP address of wherever that supposed quote-unquote target is coming from and launch some sort of cyber attack. But all you had to do was wave your hand or flick your wrist. And I've already read in depth about some of that stuff, like I said, in DARPA's documentation. Autonomic computing is one of the building blocks of pervasive computing. Pervasive being available everywhere, ubiquitous. Can't get away from it. An anticipated future computing model in which tiny, even invisible computers will be all around us. Yes, can you say smart dust? IBM was one of the first adapters that played with smart dust. Don't forget nanotechnology as well. Even invisible computers will be all around us, communicating through increasingly interconnected networks. And yes, then that all ties into the Internet of Things. Cisco used to call it the Internet of Everything. All right, let's take a look at the time. Somehow I managed already 45 minutes of babbling. All right, now let's get to the story. Scientists, I wanted to get to this the other day, and I didn't, and then a few people dropped it to me in chat and said, Joel, did you see this? It's another one of those stories that, for some unknown reason, people seem to think of me when they saw it. So the story I see the other day out of phys.org, scientist develops model for robots with bacteria-controlled brains. And if you remember, we watched a video a few months ago that Pigmine had about Lego robots that had worm brains, and the robot itself actually was able to go around the walls of the room and determine where the walls are versus where it could freely move in the center of the room, and they showed the worm brain learning. Well, check out this one. Forget the Vulcan mind meld of the Star Trek generation. As far as mind control techniques go, bacteria is the next frontier. And you know, one of the other things I thought about when I saw the story, do you remember that story about Toxoplasmos, the bacteria that cats have? That I don't remember where he was. He was some Eastern Bloc scientist, had discovered years ago he was onto something where he thought that the cat had something that could get into your brain and literally brain control you. Well, they took him seriously after many years of research, and they discovered that, yes, Toxoplasmos can control you, and it pretty much gives you love goggles for your kitty cat and allows the cat to kind of almost have I don't know if you'd even call it a symbiotic relationship with its human, but it definitely makes you more preferential to the cat. They found that when they infected mice with that Toxoplasmos, the mouse was no longer afraid of the cat, which would be the nature of the mouse to be afraid of a predator. So anyway, now we're looking at bacteria for mind-controlled robots so this is from the Med Science Gone Mad Locker. In a paper published July 16th of 2015 in Scientific Reports, which is part of the Nature Publishing Group, a Virginia Tech scientist used a mathematical model to demonstrate that bacteria can control the behavior of an inanimate device like a robot. Yes. Bacteria can control the behavior of an inanimate device. This almost sounds to me like the next generation of enchanted objects. First one will be enchanted by some sort of smart technology. Then by next generation by bacterial intelligence. And then we will have the super human artificial intelligence of Skynet in the end. Quote, basically, this is this guy out of Virginia Tech. Basically, we are trying to find out from the mathematical model if we could build a living microbiome. And yes, anyone who wants to learn about the microbiome, go back to the UCY Before the First Cup archives. We did a lot on the microbiome as well. If we could build a living microbiome on a non-living host and control the host through that microbiome, said Reuter, an assistant professor of biological systems engineering in both the College of Architecture and Life Sciences and the College of Engineering. Now, how scary is that? Anyone doing research on how to control a host through their microbiome, and right now it's going to be, of course, for some sort of small robot to run around a room, but in the future, if they learn to control you through your microbiome, that means that they will be able to control every biological system within your body. It's kind of like the Brain Project, just to the nth degree. Something that we see funding going into that, of course, is going to be for the savior of the future of humanity, as far as they tell you. But don't believe a word of that. It's going to be for the absolute takeover of all of biology. Quote, we found that robots may indeed be able to have working brains, he says. And again, we have another merging of biology and synthetic biology. For future experiments, Reuter is building real-world robots that have the ability to read bacterial gene expression levels in, let's say, E. coli using miniature fluorescent microscopes. The robots will respond to bacteria that he will engineer in his lab, and on a broad scale, understanding the biochemical sensing between organisms could have far-reaching implications in ecology, biology, and robotics. Well, yes, very far-reaching implications. In agriculture, Bacteria robot model systems could enable robust studies that explore the interactions between soil bacteria and livestock. In healthcare, understanding of bacteria's role in controlling gut physiology, and don't forget, your gut physiology has a direct connect via the vagus nerve to the brain, could lead to bacteria-based prescriptions to treat mental and physical illnesses, or to create them. Reuter also envisions droids that could execute tasks such as deploying bacteria to remediate oil spills. And yes, oh, of course, it's all for the good of humanity. The findings also add to the ever-growing body of research about bacteria in the human body that are thought to regulate health and mood, especially the theory that bacteria also affects behavior. Ding, ding, ding! The study was inspired by real-world experiments where mating behavior of fruit flies was manipulated using bacteria, as well as mice that exhibited signs of lower stress when implanted with probiotics. Reuter's approach revealed unique decision-making behavior by bacteria robot systems by coupling and computationally stimulating widely accepted equations that describe three distinct elements. Engineered gene circuits in E. coli. Wow, what a scary mouthful of words engineered gene circuits are. Microfluid bioreactors, oh my God, and robot movements. You know, if I went back to school, I would actually go back to school for this crap, I think. It's so fascinating and so horrifying at the same time, but I would love to at least be able to understand the mad science behind it all. The bacteria in the mathematical experiment exhibited their genetic circuitry by either turning red or green according to what they ate. And in the mathematical model, the theoretical robot was equipped with sensors and a miniature microscope to measure the color of bacteria, telling it where and how fast to go based upon the pigment and intensity of color. And there's There's a robot video here. It looks like of this Reuter and a student with a notebook and a robot on the floor. I don't know if there is any audio besides them just sitting here, but let's see what happens if we can play this. Maybe, maybe, baby. Let's see if it'll play. Virginia Tech. Oh, yeah, hold on. Hold on, I gotta crank up the volume. Sorry. Here we go. All right, we are gonna back the truck up, Chuck. Here it goes. Virginia Tech, invent the future.
My name's Warren Reuter, and I'm an assistant professor here in the Department of Biological Systems Engineering in the College of Agriculture and Life Science at Virginia Tech. In my laboratory, we focus on engineering cellular decision-making, and we use the tools of a field called synthetic biology to reprogram the endogenous biochemical pathways inside cells that govern the cellular decision-making.
So there you go, synthetic biology, that's what it's all about, people. I'm telling you, this is the genie that is so freaking out of the bottle right now. There's no way to turn this back. This is like the new Tinker Toys for all the wannabe little boys who didn't have Legos when they were growing up. This is not good.
Our objective is to explore interactions between living cells that are part of the microbiome and a robotic biomimetic host. The way we did that was by taking well-characterized and robust equations from bacteria that describe bacterial behavior and linking those equations to equations and models that describe simple robotic behaviors. When we linked those two, we saw emergent behavior in a virtual simulation. We were able to watch how a robot driven by bacteria would move in its environment. And by doing so, we saw both simple behaviors and more complicated behaviors as we increased the complexity of the biochemical programs that were engineered into the living microbiome. The final step will be to take the engineered living cells that we now have in the laboratory with the robotic systems that we now have and link them together with an interface technology called microfluidics. By building small bioreactors where these cells can live and placing those bioreactors on the robot, the complete system can be realized to the point that we have mobile robots that harbor living colonies of bacteria that direct the robot's behavior.
Oh my God, this is just so insane.
At first, when we placed simple models and simple programming into the biochemistry of the cells, we saw simple robot behaviors. When we gave the robot one extra component, an ability to talk back to the living bacteria on board, we saw that the cells go from simply toggling between their different fuel preferences to approaching a fuel source, pausing, and then moving rapidly towards it. This type of behavior is known as stalk, pause, strike in higher order, more complex animals. And this work showed that a microbiome alone linked to a simple robotic host could recapitulate this more complicated behavior.
That is just unbelievable. So we are integrating now brains and robots, regardless if it's bacterial or if it's human, because don't think for a second that at some point in the future they are not going to start messing with brain cells if they aren't already. I know there was a story, it's back from a few weeks ago, where they have fully engineered now a human body on a chip, and I don't know if I can find that one for today. If not, we'll find it for tomorrow, because there's still so much that I haven't done. Guys, I don't know how to put the genie back in the bottle. I think we all need to go back to school and become part of the machine to help stop this forward progress. This is not progress at all. This is... Oh, here we go. This is out of Motherboard Vice. If we can get it to load. The living, breathing human on a chip is coming. The sleek contraption that just won this year's UK Design Award doesn't resemble a living organ, but this translucent, glowing microchip with slender tubes branching off of it breathes just like a human lung. The device, which was created by researchers at where? Da, 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 Harvard's Weiss Institute, WISS, look it up. It is a pit of vipers. This is the Harvard's Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering. Is made from a rubber-like polymer that is a mixture of biological human cells and a fluid that mimics blood. The lung device is, and DARPA was working on all of this before, so I'm sure that this Weiss Institute has DARPA funding to work on this for them. The lung device is just one of several human organ simulators designed by the researcher Dan Ha, a former Weiss Institute fellow and assistant professor in bioengineering at the University of Pennsylvania. They are tiny microchips about the size of a computer memory stick that we use for growing living cells and mimicking the most important structures and functions of human organs. Ha and his colleagues have already made devices that mimic lungs, kidneys, and skin. We are doing many different organs and by having a common blood vessel channel, we can actually link them together to eventually create a human body on a chip. And again, we did that story two or three times over the last few years about DARPA's plan to create a human on a chip. All right, guys, you have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.